Strong, and this is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Katie Weaver, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present the American Tall Tale Pecos Bill on American Stories. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
As worldwide temperatures continue to rise, thick sheets of ice called glaciers are going away. Some are melting, while others are evaporating. This will hurt the people and nations that depend on glaciers. They provide water for hydroelectric power. They bring in visitors and money from visitors. And their layers of ice keep a record of climate history. In some places, people consider the ice on top of distant mountains to be representations of spirits. The melting ice means trouble for people in Africa, Europe, South America, and Indonesia. The Rwenzori Mountains in Africa are on the border of Uganda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. There once were 40 glaciers, but less than half remained by 2005. Experts believe all the glaciers in the Rwenzori Mountains will be gone in 20 years. Richard Taylor is a professor who studies hydrogeology at University College in London. He said Uganda will have trouble if the water does not flow as usual. Uganda depends on the melting ice for hydroelectric power. In Tanzania, Mount Kilimanjaro has lost about 90% of its ice. Some of the ice turns directly into water vapor and does not produce any water as it goes away. People are worried that the lack of ice and snow on the mountain will mean fewer visitors. Tourists made up about 10% of Tanzania's economic output in 2019. Rainer Prince studies glaciers at the University of Innsbruck in Austria. He said people in Tanzania see the snow and ice on top of the mountains as the seat of God. It has a very spiritual meaning, he said. Prince added that the loss of glaciers might also affect the religious beliefs of the people who live near the mountain. In Europe, on the border of Germany and Austria, less than half a square kilometer of ice remains on 5 glaciers combined. Scientists estimate that is an 88% loss compared to 1850. Christoph Meyer is a scientist at the Bavarian Academy of Sciences and Humanities in Munich, Germany. He believes the economy will be hurt when travel companies can no longer tell visitors they can see and walk on high mountains with glaciers. People living around these regions really live from tourism. There will be an impact on them if they lose these glaciers, Meyer said. Scientists are also concerned about the loss of history as glaciers melt. R. Dwi Susanto is an oceanographer, or ocean scientist. During a 2010 visit to the Karstens Glacier in Indonesia, he took samples from the ice. But the samples only let scientists examine climate records dating back to the 1960s. He said the loss of the glacial ice is sad, because it's not only a loss of local or national heritage for Indonesia, but this is also the loss of climate heritage for the world. Disappearing glaciers are also a problem in South America. Scientists are concerned that the Humboldt Glacier in Venezuela could be gone in 20 years. They are studying what is happening to the land around the glacier. The scientists want to be able to warn other communities that still depend on large glaciers for water and power. Lauren Vargo studies glaciers for the Antarctic Research Center in Wellington, New Zealand. She said, "Losing glaciers will badly hurt Peru, which depends on melting ice as a water source. Peru already lost about 30% of its glaciers between 2000 and 2016. Meyer, the scientist in Germany, said, "Losing the glaciers will affect more than just the local communities. It will cause problems around the world, from higher sea levels to changes in usual weather." He said, "Losing the glaciers is really a warning sign of what is coming in the future." I'm Dan Friedel.
The Apostolic Library in Vatican City is home to ancient writings, rare books, and reading rooms. Now it is opening a small new space to the public where modern-day artwork can be seen next to the library's treasures. The first show at the space is called Tutti, the Italian word for all. It was suggested by Pope Francis's 2020 letter called Brothers All. The message appealed for environmental renewal, greater human unity, and a more just socioeconomic order in the world after the COVID-19 crisis. Artist Pietro Ruffo of Italy's capital, Rome, was invited to design the first show. Maps and migration are among the common subjects of his work. At the library, he transformed one room into a tropical forest. In another room, Ruffo designed a modern version of one of the library's ancient maps of the Nile River. He placed both maps side by side. The leader of the Roman Catholic Church and Vatican City ruler, Pope Francis, opened the Apostolic Library's new space last week. Pope Francis said the world was in need of new maps after COVID-19. He called for a greater sense of fraternity or brotherhood. Humanity needs new maps to discover the sense of fraternity, of friendship, and the common good, he said. We need a new beauty that isn't the usual reflection of power of some, but a courageous mosaic of everyone's diversity. The estate of former U.S. businessman Kirk Kerkorkian paid for the project. Early in his time as Pope, Francis had appealed for the Apostolic Library to open itself up more to the outside world. In 2016, Francis declared the papal summer home in Castel Gandolfo open to visitors. The exhibit at the Apostolic Library is open Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The current show will close February 22, 2022. Visitors must seek admission through an online request. The price of admission is about $17. The Apostolic Library is separate from the Vatican Apostolic Archives, which is home to all the documentation from papal headquarters and embassies. Both the library and the archives are open to researchers upon request. I'm Katie Weaver.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Igor in Brazil. Hello, guys. My name is Igor, and I'd like to say you all are amazing, fantastic, superb, etc. I just love this channel. But the preposition about is just killing me. I can't get why sometimes people use about followed by ing. And sometimes followed by an infinitive. Thanks a lot. Dear Igor, thank you for your kind words. You asked an interesting question because there are several uses of about. The word can be either an adverb or a preposition. In some cases, it acts as an adjective. Let us look at the adverb form first. Adverbs describe a verb, an adjective, another adverb, or a statement. When we use about as an adverb, it can mean almost or nearly, as in this example.
We are about ready to take a walk.
With numbers, you can use about when you are not sure of the exact amount.
We will be gone for about 20 minutes.
And here is the point where you will hear an infinitive verb with to after about, when the adverb means you are very close to doing something.
We are about to leave for our walk. Are you coming?
Now let us think about how about works as a preposition. As you probably know, a preposition shows direction, place, or time, or introduces an object. Prepositions are used with a noun, pronoun, or noun phrase. About as a preposition indicates the subject of a thought, feeling, or action, as in,
stop shouting about the problem and do something.
When we add ing to a verb, we are making it a gerund, which is a word that acts like a noun. In this statement, a gerund follows about.
We talked about buying a car.
The gerund, buying, is the subject of what is being said. Finally, we can find about being used as an adjective, that is, to describe a noun or pronoun. Here is an example of a feeling many of us have had these days.
After the lockdown, it feels great to be out and about again.
Here, out and about means outside of one's home. I hope this helps you use about more confidently, Igor. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Today we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A tall tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Pecos Bill was a larger-than-life hero of the American West. No one knows who first told stories about Pecos Bill. Cowboys may have invented the stories. Others say Edward O'Reilly invented the character in stories he wrote for The Century magazine in the early 1900s. The stories were collected in a book called The Saga of Pecos Bill, published in 1923. Another writer, James Cloyd Bowman, wrote an award-winning children's book called Pecos Bill, The Greatest Cowboy of All Time. The book won the Newbery Honor in 1938. Pecos Bill was not a historical person, but he does represent the spirit of early settlers in the American West. His unusual childhood and extraordinary actions tell about people who believed there were no limits to what they could do. Now, here is Barbara Klein with our story.
Pecos Bill had one of the strangest childhoods a boy ever had. It all started after his father decided that there was no longer enough room in East Texas for his family.
"Pack up, Ma," he cried. "Neighbors moving in 50 miles away. It's getting too crowded."
So they loaded up a wagon with all their things. Now some say they had 15 children, while others say 18. However many there were, the children were louder than thunder. And as they set off across the wild country of West Texas, their mother and father could hardly hear a thing. Now, as they came to the Pecos River, the wagon hit a big rock. The force threw Little Bill out of the wagon, and he landed on the sandy ground. Mother did not know Bill was gone until she gathered the children for the midday meal. Mother set off with some of the children to look for Bill, but they could find no sign of him. Well, some people say Bill was just a baby when his family lost him. Others say he was 4 years old. But all agree that a group of animals called coyotes found Bill and raised him. Bill did all the things those animals did, like chase lizards and howl at the moon. He became as good a coyote as any. Now, Bill spent 17 years living like a coyote, until one day a cowboy rode by on his horse. Some say the cowboy was one of Bill's brothers. Whoever he was, he took one look at Bill and asked, "What are you?" Bill was not used to human language. At first, he could not say anything. The cowboy repeated his question. This time, Bill said, "Varmint." That is a word used for any kind of wild animal.
"No, you aren't," said the cowboy. "Yes, I am," said Bill. "I have fleas." "Lots of people have fleas," said the cowboy. "You don't have a tail." "Yes, I do," said Bill. "Show it to me then," the cowboy said. Bill looked at his backside and realized that he did not have a tail like the other coyotes.
"Well, what am I then?" asked Bill.
"You're a cowboy, so start acting like one," the cowboy cried out. Well, that was all Bill needed to hear. He said goodbye to his coyote friends and left to join the world of humans. Now, Pecos Bill was a good cowboy. Still, he hungered for adventure. One day, he heard about a rough group of men. There is some debate over what the group was called, but one storyteller calls it the Hell's Gate Gang. So Bill set out across the rough country to find this gang of men. Well, Bill's horse soon was injured, so Bill had to carry it for 100 miles. Then Bill met a rattlesnake 50 feet long. The snake made a hissing noise and was not about to let Bill pass. But after a tense minute, Bill beat the snake until it surrendered. He felt sorry for the varmint, though, and wrapped it around his arm. After Bill walked another 100 miles, he came across an angry mountain lion. There was a huge battle, but Bill took control of the big cat and put his saddle on it. He rode that mountain lion all the way to the camp of the Hell's Gate gang. Now, when Bill saw the gang, he shouted out, "Who's the boss around here?" A huge cowboy, 9 feet tall, took one look at Bill and said in a shaky voice,
"I was the boss, but you are the boss from here on in."
With his gang, Pecos Bill was able to create the biggest ranch in the Southwest. Bill and his men had so many cattle that they needed all of New Mexico to hold them. Arizona was the pasture where the cattle ate grass. Pecos Bill invented the art of being a cowboy. He invented the skill of throwing a special rope called a lasso over a cow's head to catch wandering cattle. Some say he used a rattlesnake for a lasso. Others say he made a lasso so big that it circled the whole earth. Bill invented the method of using a hot branding iron to permanently put the mark of a ranch on a cow's skin. That helped stop people from stealing cattle. Some say he invented cowboy songs to help calm the cattle and make the cowboy's life easier. But he is also said to have invented tarantulas and scorpions as jokes. Cowboys have had trouble with those poisonous creatures ever since. Now, Pecos Bill could ride anything that ever was. So, as some tell the story, there came a storm bigger than any other. It all happened during the worst drought the West had ever seen. It was so dry that horses and cows started to dry up and blow away in the wind. So when Bill saw the windstorm, he got an idea. The huge tornado kicked across the land like a wild bronco. But Bill jumped on it without a thought.
He rode that tornado across Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, all the time squeezing the rain out of it to save the land from drought. When the storm was over, Bill fell off the tornado. He landed in California. He left a hole so deep that to this day it is known as Death Valley. Now, Bill had a horse named Widowmaker. He got that name because any man who rode that horse would be thrown off and killed, and his wife would become a widow. No one could ride that horse but Bill. And Widowmaker, in the end, caused the biggest problem for Pecos Bill. You see, one day, Bill saw a woman. Not just any woman, but a wild, red-haired woman riding a giant catfish down the Rio Grande River. Her name was Slewfoot Sue, and Bill fell in love with her at first sight. Well, Bill would not rest until he had asked for her hand in marriage, and Slewfoot Sue accepted. On their wedding day, Pecos Bill dressed in his best buckskin suit, and Sue wore a beautiful white dress with a huge steel spring bustle in the back. It was the kind of big dress that many women wore in those days. The bigger, the better. Now, after the marriage ceremony, Slewfoot Sue got a really bad idea. She decided that she wanted to ride Widowmaker. Bill begged her not to try, but she had her mind made up. Well, the second she jumped on the horse's back, he began to kick and buck like nothing anyone had ever seen. He sent Sue flying so high that she sailed clear over the new moon. She fell back to earth, but the steel spring bustle just bounced her back up as high as before. Now, there are many different stories about what happened next. One story says Bill saw that Sue was in trouble. She would keep bouncing forever if nothing was done. So he took his rope out, though some say it was a huge rattlesnake, and lassoed Sue to catch her and bring her down to earth. Only she just bounced him back up with her. Somehow the two came to rest on the moon, and that's where they stayed. Some people say they raised a family up there. Their children were as loud and wild as Bill and Sue were in their younger days. People say the sound of thunder that sometimes carries over the dry land around the Pecos River is nothing more than Pecos Bill's family laughing up a storm.
We're the toughest critter west of the Alamo.
Once there was a drought that spread all over Texas, so to sunny California he did go. And though the gag is kind of corny, he brought rain to California. That's the way we got to go for Mexico.
So yippee-yi-yi-yi, yippee-yi-yo, for the toughest critter west of the Alamo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.